on this podcast, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how is it that people in our past that we once loved and once had a relationship with, we know that that relationship is toxic. We don't want that relationship. We've made a decision to not have that relationship, but yet we still feel a pull back into it, and we're torn, and we don't even want it, and we don't know why that keeps happening. So the reason that happens is because we have a part of our brain, which is the part of the brain that instinctively protects you, that can also work against you and cause you to self-sabotage, and you won't even realize you're doing it. And then when you do wake up and you realize it, you say, what's wrong with me? Why do I keep doing that? Well, first of all, even that kind of self-talk makes yourself believe that something's wrong with you. Mm-hmm. Nothing's wrong with you. Your body's working perfectly, but that's another opportunity for you to heal, yet you miss that opportunity because you try to just push the feeling away. Mm-hmm. Your body's causing the feeling to come up to say, hey, there's a part of us that still needs to heal. That's why it hurts. It hurts if you stub your toe. Mm-hmm. It hurts if you burn your finger. It hurts if you step on a piece of glass. Why does it hurt? To get your attention. If it didn't hurt, you would just keep stepping on the glass. You would keep burning your finger. But we think something's wrong with us. So let me explain how the T-1 is working and what your heart is trying to lead you into, but you've been trained to do opposite. So you keep staying in this path and your body keeps giving you another chance and another chance and another chance to heal, but rather than you seeing it as a chance to heal, you actually see it as, why do I keep doing this to myself? Okay, I'm going to use a very obvious traumatic experience to explain how a T-1 is created so that you can correlate a bad relationship or a toxic relationship to something that's real easy to see, because a toxic relationship is easy to see. It's toxic, but it's very hard to see it when you're in it. Mm-hmm. But let's just say you saw a murder. You wouldn't have a hard time figuring out if that murder was toxic, right? So if you saw a murder, and let's just say that murder took place in a Walmart bathroom. Every time you walked into a Walmart or you drove into the parking lot, your T-1 memory would begin to alert you. Mm-hmm. It would send adrenaline and cortisol. Your eyesight might get better. Your hearing might get better. Your body's on more alert. Now, you know that that's not the same day that the murder took place. It could be a Walmart in a different state. But your body is going to start preparing to protect you because a murder took place in the bathroom one time. You know, of course, this is all hypothetical. Let's just say that you're not in Walmart and now you're in JCPenney and you get close to a bathroom or you got to go to the bathroom. Do you understand your body's going to begin to release endorphins to put you on the alert because you saw something bad happen in a bathroom? Mm-hmm. That's what's happening. Now that which would protect you from a murder so that you could get away or maybe go get help or call 911 or whatever you need to do, you don't need that every time you go to pee. Mm-hmm. Right? But your brain, your subconscious brain, don't know that. So the only way to heal that part of you so that you're not flashing back subconsciously and releasing those chemical ligands from your hypothalamus into your bloodstream is you're going to have that memory heal. Now, in Scripture, it talks about us redeeming the time. What does that mean to redeem time? Like, I can go to the store and I can purchase some milk, but I can't say go to the store and purchase a couple hours. Mm-hmm. I can't go purchase 1996 mm-hmm. and bring it home with me, mm-hmm. right? Well, if you redeem something, don't you think about getting it back, right? So how do you redeem time? You can redeem time by going back into that memory in that real bathroom where it happened, and we can ask God to show us this murder from a different perspective. Even if that perspective is not accurate and we use our imagination to pretend that Jesus was in the bathroom physically when it happened, that Jesus, you know, scooped up that person's spirit out of the body even though God didn't stop the murder from happening, that we bring love into that event, some kind of way, even if it's through make-believe, and you feel comforted. You watch the person that got murdered feel comforted. You watch them transition into the next dimension. And you saw all kinds of beautiful stuff happen at the same time you saw the murder. Guess what your brain would do? It would put that to rest. Mm-hmm. Because part of you says, how could that happen? How could somebody be so mean? How could God let that happen? Oh my gosh. Your brain will calculate all kinds of stuff that will make you feel afraid and not loved, or that person wasn't loved, or unfair or unjust. Well, your body needs justice. Your body needs balance. It's always going to seek for balance. It's going to seek for understanding. It's going to seek for rest. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't make a murder restful. But if you go back and you just pretend that you could see that murder from before time, in time, and after time, you will actually cause that T-1 memory in your brain to be at complete rest. And then from then on, anytime you go to Walmart or any other store and you go near a bathroom, your body won't do what it did before. So now let's take that extreme hypothetical example and let's bring it into a relationship mm-hmm. that was toxic. That you now no longer are in that relationship, you don't want to be in that relationship, you've realized that relationship is detrimental, but you still have memory of your old feelings. Guess what that memory will feel like when it floods your bloodstream? It'll feel like you're still in love, even if you're not. A smell could make that happen. A song could make that happen. You could walk into Dillard's and smell the cologne or the perfume of a man or woman that anybody was in love with at one time, and that smell is going to make you feel in love. Does it mean you are? No, it means that you have a T-1 memory in your brain, and when you smelt the smell of that, right now I can think of perfumes from when I was in high school that when I smelled it made me think of a certain boy. Mm-hmm. I'm not in love with those boys. Mm-hmm. I'm not that 15-year-old little girl either. But my subconscious brain will release the chemical cocktail into my bloodstream of what it felt like when I was 15. And my frontal lobe will go, wait a minute, am I still in love? No, you're not in love. You're having a T-1 memory. No different than a Vietnam vet hearing a helicopter go over his head, or you walking past the bathroom where you saw a murder, or any other traumatic experience. Well, when your heart's broken, it's traumatic, isn't it? Yeah, if you have a situation where you were in love, you thought you wanted to spend the rest of your life with an individual, it could be puppy love in seventh grade. Doesn't matter. It could be, you know, grown-up love and you were married for, you know, 20 years. So how do you heal that? The same way you heal the bathroom murder event. You go back into some of those places where you felt completely in love and you thought you were going to spend the rest of your life with that person, and we begin to marry those emotions with some of the toxic emotions. We begin to marry those together, and we begin to ask your heart, while we have those T-1 opened up, like if I knew what smell that person smelled like and I could bring that smell into the room while I was doing a T-1 rewiring and redeeming the time, we could marry all that together. And it would feel different. So let's just say, let's say it was Calvin Klein cologne, and your favorite meal was, or your favorite date was, y'all would go get vanilla ice cream, and y'all would sit on the banks of the Pontchartrain or whatever, and just watch the sunset. And that was one of the most, maybe when you fell in love, I'll just make up some stuff, right? So you fall in love and all that. If I brought in the Calvin Klein perfume smell, and I brought in a taste of vanilla ice cream, and I had you pretend you were sitting on the banks of the Lake Pontchartrain, and then I make the sound of water, guess what's going to happen? You're going to feel in love just like that. But at the same time, if I bring in, while you're feeling that feeling of love, other things that were toxic, not only for you, but anybody else that you love, and we marry those, your brain's going to go, aha. These things go together. And then we bring some type of conversation with you and God into the picture. You and Jesus, maybe sitting on the banks of the Pontchartrain, and you say, why did this happen? And blah, blah, blah. You ask him a bunch of questions. And even if the answer that you get is hypothetical, we just pretend Jesus told you something that you needed to hear. Do you know that your subconscious brain won't know the difference? And it will actually heal that T-1 memory? Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, I could put Calvin Klein perfume under your nose and put a taste of vanilla in your mouth. And I could put the sound of water and you could pretend you're on Lake Pontchartrain, and you're not going to feel like you did before. Mm-hmm. It'll feel totally different because we've changed it. And whenever you're around a person that you once loved, that you realize was not a good relationship for you, it was a toxic relationship, you always still have love for that person. Mm-hmm. They're another human being. But it doesn't mean you're in love. And when you marry everything together into the memory so that they're almost like, it's like taking red paint and black paint. The red paint's where you felt the love, the black paint's where you felt all the pain. And we mix those together, you don't know, you no longer have red paint and black paint, do you? You have them all swirled. So it's a totally different color now. Mm-hmm. So then when you're around that person in the future, you're going to feel different than you are feeling when you're so confused. Like, why do I keep feeling these feelings? We can make it not happen. We can even practice it in your imagination until you feel it here that you don't feel that feeling, and it'll be completely healed. Completely healed. You're still going to have to see that person. You might have to see them at work or whatever. You have to see that person, whatever. It could be at college. It could be at the supermarket. It could be at a family reunion. You know, what if a person was abused by their uncle so-and-so? And every time they're around Uncle So-and-so, they have to vomit and can't eat food. Well, that's because they have a T-minus memory because Uncle So-and-so was pretty creepy, right? Mm-hmm. But you can heal those memories. And I've learned this over time. Once you have it happen to you once in one area of your life, and then you find out that you have these same kinds of feelings in other areas of your life, you then can take the knowledge that I gave you and the experience, like you're going to have an experience today. And when we're finished, we'll test it. We'll test that experience over and over in your imagination. And it'll be like, oh my gosh, I don't feel that anymore. You feel something. It's going to feel bittersweet. It's not going to feel bitter anymore or just sweet anymore. It's going to feel bittersweet. So it's going to have a different taste, a different smell. It's going to look different. It's going to feel different. It's gonna sound different. All your sight, smell, taste, touch, and hearing, we're gonna mix it all together. And you don't realize you can mix memories together, but you can. You can mix memories with an imagination of what you wish would happen. And when you do that, it changes the way your body responds in the future. Jesus, before he came to this earth, before the foundations of the earth were ever established, the Bible said he saw the glory set before him. And that vision of the glory set before him hadn't even happened yet, had it? It was imaginary because he was considering it. He was looking into the future. Why? Because he could. So he considered the future, the glory set before him, and it was that allowed him to endure the cross. Guess how you do that? The same way. You look at your life from before time, in time, and after time. And when you do that, it changes that T-1 memory in your brain. It literally allows you to redeem time, and you're no longer stuck in a time warp, which is your past, and you keep going, why do I keep feeling this way? So that's how you heal that. And another thing that we want to bring out at this point that could be a possibility, and I didn't know this until this year in my studies. Oftentimes when we as an individual feel an attraction towards another person that we don't want to feel, it's not that you're attracted to the person. It's that you're attracted to some attribute that they hold and operate in that you lost a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So let me give you an example. Let's just say that when you were a little girl, you were spontaneous and curious, and you had a vivid imagination, and you love to dance, but something bad happened in your life, and then you couldn't be spontaneous, and you couldn't have a strong imagination. Okay, there goes the truck, so we'll wait for the podcast so people can hear better. So let's just say that you lost your ability to be spontaneous. I'm waiting for the truck to leave, you guys. People who listen to my podcast are accustomed to outdoor noises, because me and Miss Nancy would take our walks in the morning. We'd record our session so that we could share it, and they'd hear the birds chirping and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so what was the last part I told you guys?
When you're often feeling attracted to
someone. Okay, yeah, you're feeling attracted to someone. And you lost your ability to be spontaneous. So then you meet someone who is super spontaneous. They have this vivid imagination and lots of dreams, and maybe they even have a little bit of grandiosity, and they love to dance. You will feel in love with that person. You will feel this major attraction to that person, and you're like, wait a minute, I don't want to feel attraction to this person. I'm in love with this person. What's wrong with me? It's not that you're in love with that person. You're in love with a part of you that you left behind. And that person's reminding you of the part of you that you had to lose to survive. Mm-hmm. And your heart's going, I want that back. I want that back. I want to be spontaneous. I want to be imaginative. I want to dance again. Well, your brain, your frontal lobe, will think that you want that person. No, it's not the person that you're after. It's the part of you that you lost whenever something traumatic happened and you no longer could be that child. Maybe you had to grow up really fast to be a parent. Maybe a parent died and you now had to be the mama of, you know, your siblings or something. People don't know this exists. So they'll have attractions to people that they think they're like romantically attracted to, and they're really not. They're trying to find a part of them that they lost. Let me give you a real good example of one of the things I tell people quite often. So I'll paint another scenario. Let's just say that you have an individual who is a bully. You have an individual who is mean and angry. And they'll say, well, that's just how I am. No, it's not just how you are. That's how you had to become, because somebody was mean to you. And so that you didn't get your butt kicked, and so that you didn't get attacked or whatever, you became a bully. And then they go, well, that's just how I am. No, that's how you lost a part of you. You probably lost your very gentle, caring, connective part of you to connect to other people because somebody bullied you for however long. Or let's say that that you had to become a caretaker for someone. And in that caretaking place, you learned to not take care of yourself. So maybe you started dressing different. Maybe everything else began to be slack. But you made sure that one person was taken care of because they were in a wheelchair, mm-hmm. Or whatever. Well, what you don't realize is that's not who you are. Mm-hmm. You had to deny yourself because you didn't have enough time to take care of yourself. And so you just started not taking care of yourself, and you did that for so long it became part of your personality. But that's not the real you. That's who you had to become during your survival mode place. So one of the things we teach people, when Michael and I are doing sessions, or when we're doing couples retreats or whatever, is we find the parts of them that they lost, and we'll try to identify them, and then we'll help them get on a quest to recover that part of them that they lost. Because once they find that part of them, again, let's say it's spontaneity, let's say it's a childlike playfulness, let's say it's a great imagination. When they recover that part of themselves, guess what they're no longer attracted to? The person they thought they were attracted to. Because it was never them in the first place. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll work on those things today.